probably shit him.
God damn it, how did I not see that at the time?
Oh,
fuck it out.
All right, may as well just bring it straight in. Welcome, everybody, to yet another Paranormal Guide podcast. Got a bit of a special one for you this time. For our long-time listeners, you will have heard the following voice many times before. She has been a guest, I wouldn't even know how many times, so 6-7 times in the past, but this is the very first time we have brought her into the studio. So first of all, I shall introduce Alison Oborn from Adelaide Time Horizon.
And that was me clapping.
She didn't have enough applause.
And that's exactly what Ash meant when he said, "And tonight we have a special one." He means
very special. That's it.
But we'll also introduce the other co-host here. Across from me is Brett. Say something. This is radio. Yeah. They can't see what you're doing.
Margarita.
It's not even radio.
It's not even.
This is poor man's radio, as I've had it called to me before.
Yes, I am Brett, and I am here yet again.
And Brett's here. And speaking to my left is Spills.
Good evening.
Spills.
How are you?
Good. Before we harass Alison, I guess we'll do the regular thing, which is, what have you guys been doing since we last recorded a week ago? Brett.
You're deferring to me because you don't know what you've done in between.
I know what I've done.
I don't.
Oh, okay.
So you go first. Well, I've got to work something out.
Ash and I went to Talem Town.
Old Talem Town.
Old Talem Town. Saturday night. With Adelaide's Haunted Horizons. Alison Oakwood. Yeah. Brett, sorry we didn't invite you.
Yeah, that's why I can tell you what I didn't do.
What didn't you do
I
this
didn't,
week?
I didn't go to Old Talem Town.
What did you do that
Why weren't you there?
Because I was not invited, but instead I sat on my ass and watched The Avengers.
Did you drink?
No comment.
that's why you guys. When I saw him today, one of the first things he said to me was, "I want to be an Avenger."
Yeah, that's why.
Why do you want to be an Avenger?
Because they are wicked cool.
They're wicked cool? Who would you be? Is there like, would you want to mimic one of the pre-existing superheroes from Marvel's lineup?
I think I've got my own special talents. I mean, to find out what they are, and I'd probably be like Major Dickhead or something like that.
Margarita
Man.
You'll just have a big question mark and exclamation mark. That'll
that's
be
the
awesome.
Joker.
With a
cop. You've just gotten me sued by the Joker. Thank you. No, the Riddler. The Riddler.
Yeah, you don't even know what you're talking
Jim
about.
Jim Carrey, The Riddler.
That was it there. Batman. Those were the terrible. That was a terrible movie.
Yes.
Spills, what did you get up to? What did we get up to?
Talem. Old Talem, sorry.
Tell us, did we experience
we
anything?
We did. Got a couple of things, but perhaps we'll leave that to a bit later.
Okay, then, fine.
Well, don't want to ruin it.
Don't want to ruin it.
No.
We'll just bring it straight to Alison now. Alison.
Yeah.
How are you? Now, like I said, a lot of people have listened for a long time, so listened to the previous series. We'll be familiar with you, but we have a lot of new listeners, so I would like to invite you to take a couple of minutes just to talk about yourself, who you are, what you do, and what got you interested in doing what you do in the first place.
Only a couple of minutes.
Well, you can take as much time as you want. go as long as you want. I'm sure they will jump in and interject as we see fit.
Well, I started researching the paranormal, set up my own team, and these two guys here... We know from old, tell a few tales about them. But then, because I did paranormal research, we were the head researchers of the Adelaide Jail for about 10 years, wrote the book on it, but also became a tour guide down there. So after tour guiding for all that time, decided to branch out and do my own thing. So set up my own tour business, Haunted Horizons, and never looked back. Huge fun.
Some people might note that your voice is a bit funny, like you're not originally from the land down under.
You want me to go all the way back?
Yeah,
Welsh, aren't you, Alison?
Welsh.
Do you know somebody once called me Scottish, and I think they ended up in a pond when I was about 7 years old.
In a pond, face down, discovered several weeks later.
Some poor little child. Right back to the beginning.
Which is pictured you drowning a child in the pond. How old were you at the time, Alison?
7.
Oh, that's okay.
Oh my god. Is there a statute of limitations of drowning children in ponds back in the UK? I don't know, but continue. No, she's not a murderer. She hasn't done any of these things. I don't know what the hell these guys are on about.
Yeah. I came from Newcastle upon Tyne, which has a Geordie accent, which I well and truly got rid of, and some child tried to accuse me of being Scottish. So
I don't know.
Geordie.
Yeah.
Is that like the TV
the Geordie
show?
Yeah.
Geordie. Oh, you could have been on that. Geordie Shores.
Geordie?
I don't know.
Your husband once told me that any time you're back with your old family, your accent comes back just like that.
Within minutes.
Within minutes. And you can't be understood at all.
Not if I go into Geordie, no.
Okay, so back in...
Even I don't understand the Geordies.
Newcastle up on Tyne?
Yep.
Okay. What were some of your experiences? So people don't normally just go, bam, I'm interested in the paranormal. Normally something will happen, like, for instance, Brett, he found a book in his youth. Spills watched some shows and thought he could replicate what they're doing for me, a book as well in my youth. What was it for you?
A haunted house.
A haunted house?
A haunted house. I was born into a haunted house, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about this house.
I just remember being terrified of that house. My brothers and sisters were the ones that experienced most of it. But my earliest childhood memory is the sound of somebody raspy breathing when there was nobody in the room. It was like
could
a laboured breathing.
The sound of a child being drowned.
Being drowned. No, I was working my way up to that one. and also the... I used to steal into my brother's bedroom because he had all the cool toys. And...
I looked straight to Brett. Straight to
Brett. I've said nothing.
Which were hidden under the bed.
Yep.
the Daleks that used to
the
ride
Daleks.
Up.
The least phallic of the doctors. Apologies, continue.
The wind-up Daleks. We'd start up and go across the floor. So.
Was there any thoughts of who this ghost might have been? Did you ever find out the identity, or is this a mystery?
No, we actually knew who he was. For those who watch the Blackadder series, the wise woman in the second season that Blackadder had to go and see, it was actually her father, the actress's father, that had the house. And he was either murdered, or he was too drunk and he'd had an accident, but he did die.
So basically
fell over
found
on a New Year's Eve. He was found dead, so with head injuries.
Poor fucker.
Well, he wasn't found dead. He was had head injuries. He was in the hospital for a quite a while.
It's not a laughing matter, Alison.
And he passed away in the hospital. So,
in a question then.
Yeah.
Living in that house over a number of years, did you find any of the activity would ramp up around that time, New Year's Eve?
According to... I can't remember it because I was very young. But according to my sisters, yes, on New Year's Eve, one sister would wake up and look across at my other sister and she'd be bathed in a strange light. They would see disembodied eyes in the corner of the room that would move across the room and then go under the bed. But it's just like two...
How old were you at that
eyes.
Age?
Oh, I was just born. But then I was about... I lived there till about 4 or 5 years old.
So the 30s.
And that was the 1830s.
Sorry, Alison.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've been born into this haunted house, and then from there you just started researching the paranormal.
I was terrified of it. I kept away. Well,
I've
to
heard
keep
some
away,
stories.
Yeah, I bet you have. But I'm absolutely terrified of the paranormal. But then started investigating and soon got to learn that it's not like the movies. Your head's not going to revolve. You're not going to vomit green vomit.
Yeah, it might.
Not yet.
Not yet.
One can only hope.
Speaking of green vomit, why don't you tell us about the video you showed us before the podcast,
Ash? Oh, no. You just have
it's
to remind
absolutely
us.
Inappropriate for the content of this show. we might start another podcast just on weird non-paranormal things, and then I'll cover such videos. So you say that you were terrified, absolutely terrified.
Absolute.
So you've gone from being absolutely terrified to doesn't seem to bother you. Where did it change?
Investigating, because we're going into so many places, and the reality of it is very little happens most of the time, and eventually you lose that fear. Doing the Adelaide jail was a good one.
Unless you're rash.
Yeah, unless you're rash.
You're just a fucking pussy.
Unlocking the jail, and when I was a tour guide there, locking it up. Kind of, you had to keep that fear level down. So you learn techniques to keep it down. There you go, Ash. I can teach them to you if you like.
I'd hate to lose the fear. And you said...
I must admit, I have said I actually do miss that fear factor.
I think everyone at this table has said that as well.
We've all said that.
So I guess why I like the tours is I can live that through the other people who are actually experiencing it more. Yeah. So, but yeah, for me, I do miss it, without a doubt.
Well, let's talk a little bit just quickly about Adelaide Java, because that was your first major location for both Paranormal Field Investigators to investigate and for Adelaide's Haunted Horizons to run the tours.
Yeah.
And these two gentlemen were there for quite a bit of that journey as well. So how did you end up with the jail in the first place? Because there weren't a lot of teams back then, but I imagine now everyone would kick and scream to try and get a location such as that. How does that fall into your lap?
Oh, look, it was kind of the government wasn't really interested in it at that point, so there wasn't as many rules, and obviously there is now, where you have to have insurance. We just approached the jail, basically, said to the manager, can we come in, have a look and see if these stories are really true that are coming out here, and she must have trusted us, because she let us in. We were only going to be there for about 3 months, and we ended up being there 10 years. I'm still there, it must have been my 13th year, 14th, 2002.
An information officer?
I'm still information officer there, so I go in and help with their history on a Sunday, one Sunday a month.
Okay.
So, yeah.
With your time at Adelaide Jail, did you find there was a peak in the activity there and that died off, or was it a constant all the way through, or what, did you find a pattern? Being in a location for 13 years.
Well, we're still trying to find patterns with all the investigations, but the main pattern that stood out, we got more... or stronger activity in winter, which would be about June, July, August, September. And full moons, we even stopped going out as a team pretty much on a full moon because we weren't getting much happening. Whereas on a new moon where it was darker, we would get more. So,
okay.
And that's the only pattern we could find that was regular enough to
You said that's for the jail, but how do you find that as far as all of the other places you've investigated over the years?
Yeah. The same, we're finding it with Tailem Town. We've been quiet for the last maybe...
Old Tailem Town.
Old Tailem Town. Sorry, Ash. Let's get it correct. It's been quiet there for the last 2 or 3 months. If you look through the diaries, it's been little things, usually very hot weather, nothing.
Well, that wasn't that quiet on Saturday,
but
right?
the weather's changed.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was pretty cold on Saturday.
Well, look, I agree with Alison in terms of investigating. I don't even bother anymore in summer.
In summer?
No.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Usually winter, all for it. Summer, don't even bother.
What about other environmental factors? Because you're in the jail, I recall, for something quite unique. You were there during an earthquake.
Yes.
And there's a lot of people that will say that seismic activity can not necessarily bring about paranormal activity, but might make you think there's some sort of paranormal activity going on. Was there anything different about the jail the night?
Very. From the very beginning, when we walked in there, we were getting weird things happening.
Okay.
Going through to the remand centre when we were opening up, we went into the remand where the cell blocks is or are and could hear footsteps down there. Now, we thought somebody had broken in. I backed up so much and I fell over the steps.
Did you?
So I'm lying there with my legs in the air, but there you go.
It's not uncommon for a... Alice Snowboard investigation, but anyway.
To be lying there with my legs in the air.
Whoa. Yeah.
We're getting out.
We didn't need to go there. It just organically happens.
Doors were opening. There was a couple of doors that when we just walked past, they were definitely shut. When we walked back again, they were wide open. Most of the tour were so scared on that tour, if anything had happened, we would have had a panic. That's how strung out they were, which is unlike my tours. I do, obviously, people do get scared, but my tours are pretty low-key, humour, keep-it-real type thing. This particular night, they would have just trampled each other. That's how keyed up they were. So people obviously were feeling something uneasy that night.
Mm.
Most of the tour had gone by the time that this earthquake hit, so there's only about 2 or 3 of us left in the new building. And then, yeah, this huge sound.
I'd love to add something in on this. There's a lot of reports of when earthquakes have occurred around the world, places like San Francisco, that dogs, cats seem to know when things are coming and they seem to know how to get out of there. Some of the theories behind that is that if you have a place with a lot of granite underneath the ground and you're having seismic activity, that that granite may create, by rubbing together, may create some type of, whether it's, you know, kind of could have created an electromagnetic field because of it we're rubbing together. I mean, I don't know the science behind that. I could be wrong, but it's creating some change that animals are able to pick up on, and that's why they have a greater number of animals disappearing, running off. And I wonder if that's also can be the case in something like that. Can people pick up on some of those energy changes?
Mm.
Because it's been particularly when there's a high level of granite in the ground, apparently.
I've actually heard another theory on it, Brett, that the seismic activity can create infrasound.
Yeah.
And the animals pick Maybe up on that. But we did infrasound to death last podcast, yeah. So
we did.
That's all right. Because the first thing I did when I wrote up after the earthquake was an article on infrasound.
We should probably add that when we say earthquake, it's not like the stuff you see on YouTube with buildings shaking. This was more of a tremor. I think the worst damage done in Adelaide was someone's gate became unhinged or something. You know, so it wasn't anything major, but it was enough to create a noise.
But we did rebuild.
We got through successfully. I think the repair costs were in the vicinity of $3.50 for the state. So it wasn't anything major, but it was enough that you did, like, could you feel that at the time?
Not on the where I was standing. You couldn't feel it through your feet, but it was like the best way of describing it was like a steam train, the sound of a steam train coming through the building from one end to the other. And you could hear the doors rocking in the frames on the second floor, but you couldn't feel anything through your feet. So I didn't know what it was. The first thing I did was message Spills. I just had something really strange happen at the jail, and he goes, "What? The earthquake?"
I was sitting at home, and I was actually I was outside sitting out the back, and from memory it was a warm night as well.
Yeah, it was.
And sitting out the back, and the veranda had just started vibrating, and I was like, "What the fuck is that?" And you could hear it coming from a distance, go through the house sort of thing, and then you could hear it rumble off into the distance. So it was be cool.
Interesting and rare experience for us, even though we are pretty much on a fault line through the Adelaide Hills, where, yeah, it's a rare experience, but one, you could be in a haunted location at a time and you were able to tell.
It was interesting that I was, because it gave me a chance to look at what happens before an earthquake in a haunted location, and it definitely was different.
Well, before we move on from the jail, so there's something I want to talk about. One of your new, well, not a location you currently have, one of your newer locations you've been taking people through, but just for the interest of people at home, what would be your number one experience that you had at the Adelaide Jail?
That would definitely be the one on the stairs.
Yeah. Go for life, so there's people from overseas listening that would not have even seen the jail.
The jail has a double-storey building called the New Building, still built in the 1870s, and it's where we did 21 hangings there, executions. And at one point, the jail was going to be shut down, and we wanted to keep people on side, the public. So two documentary makers wanted to make a documentary. So it was my job to take them around, along with another guide, and kind of tell them what had been going on. They were sceptics. They didn't believe in ghosts.
Yeah.
So we got around the jail. I'd also been in the office earlier that night, just hedging my bets, sitting on the desk and going, if anything is here tonight, please, please do it tonight, because we need to keep these guys on side so we can keep the jail open. Whatever I said must have been in the right way, because crossing over the yard, one of them got stroked on his face, and that freaked him out. But it got better in the new building. So I'm standing on these stairs, starting to talk about the ghost that has been seen there, which is an old guard up on the second floor. And as I'm saying that, we started to hear footsteps coming across the gantry from one of the other block, or one of the other sections of the block. Now, at this stage, I'm standing there, kind of grinning and just going, yes, like that. It stopped at the top of the stairs, and kind of the jaws of these guys dropped, so they obviously all heard it. But I didn't expect what happened next, and that's when it came down the steps towards us. Now, we couldn't see anything. We could hear it. We could hear the click of the heel. We could hear the squeak in the leather. It walked right past me between the two guys. It walked right between us. The best way of describing the feeling is if you have a balloon, rub it up and down your arm. So all the static brings the hair up. That's what it felt like on one side. The two guys stepped aside. And later on, they said they felt they had to because an authoritative figure was coming through. And then we just listened to it walking off down the hallway and out the door at the end.
That's awesome.
Now, I'll try and rationalise most things. There's just no way I could find a reason for that, I guess, a logical reason. But it was later on, I was interviewing a guard that used to work there, and it was after my experience, and he said that another guard who was working there one night had come out of his office under the stairs because he'd heard another guard in there coming down the stairs. So he'd come into the hallway, and he could hear the boots coming down the stairs, but the stairs have openings in them. He couldn't see any legs or anything. He could just hear a person coming down. So it also happened back when it was a working part of the jail as well. So that was my big experience at the jail.
Yes.
Spills has had a few.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of spills.
Yeah, I've discussed. I brought those up. We had a couple of good ones, Alison. I mean,
you the running jail, was one of them.
Me running. Yeah, well, that was...
If you just heard that click, we just realised the air conditioner is still running. Hopefully you've now got cleaner audio. But yeah, okay. Brett, well, we know of Spills' experience and we've heard some of Alison's experience. Did you have any experiences at Adelaide Jail during the time investigating there?
Nothing I could say, you know, of note, you know, and anything that certainly stands out. You know, it's always been great to get out there and get around and... but yeah, certainly nothing that I can at least remember off the top of my head. Harrison, I know it's really exciting. No, you wanted some great story, but
we like the drunk Brett. Bring it back.
Well, then bring me some more vodka and
margaritas.
Let me see what I can do.
Recently, so for a long time, I remember you saying you wish you had an asylum. You've investigated through a jail. And run tours through a jail. You've investigated, run tours through a pioneer village. You've run and investigated tours through historical homes, old mansions, but you'd never had an asylum. But about 6 months ago, you were given that opportunity to run a tour and to investigate through probably what many people in Adelaide would say would be their number one location to visit if they could. And you got that opportunity.
We did.
What was the go with that? And I guess, tell us about it. Tell us about that time there.
That would be Zed Ward, which is the criminally insane, or the old criminally insane ward that is at the back of what used to be Glenside Hospital, or Parkside Lunatic Asylum, as it used to be known in its early days. And it's now privately owned. It was sold off, and the people who own it allowed the National Trust to come in and run tours for a short time. So for the night tours, they actually asked us to come in and do the night tours. Yep. And it was all in the name of raising money for the National Trust for heritage projects. So would we do it?
I've said for many
would
years...
Would you like to? Yeah.
I always knew Alison would end up in an asylum, just not in this way.
It was like, we walked through the door and it was like, I'm home.
Can I just say, you're a member of the National Trust, Alison?
I'm not a member, no. I'm a sponsor of the National Trust.
Okay, so sponsor. Yeah. And this is another thing that a lot of people don't see in Alison, you know. The people that know of Alison see her as an expert or the go-to person in the paranormal field within Adelaide.
Mm.
And but they don't see the side where Alison's actively involved in trying to prevent government from selling off historic buildings.
And preserving history.
Exactly right. So, you know, well done, Alison.
Thank you. I'll give myself a clap. Yeah, look, it was all about heritage projects and kind of saving South Australia's heritage. So we raised quite a lot of money during those 69 nights. We took 1,300 people through and donated it to the National Trust.
Fantastic. So,
it's giving back. And at the same time, it was the best 69 nights.
What a number.
Of my life.
No, you had to go to an asylum.
Yeah, there's something spooky about that number.
Far out. So what were some of the history you uncovered about the place?
Well, we obviously didn't know anything about it when we first took it on, as in, is it haunted? Is there a ghost in there? We didn't know. We were quite honest with our advertising.
There were no ghost stories already?
There was a couple floating, but you don't know how much of that would be just urban myth, teenagers, things like that, knocking around the place.
Yep.
So, to have ghosts, you've got to have history. You've got to have deaths. So that's one of the things we looked into. We found there was a murder, or possible. I won't say it's a murder. It was never answered as to whether it was or it wasn't. But going back in 1935, I think it was, there was a patient that was found dead in his room, which was a bit of a mystery. And there was a couple of other sad cases in there that we cover on the tour. But, yeah, there's a few deaths in there.
With some of the experiences that either yourself or the people on tours have had, have you had anything that matches up with the stories you found through your research?
We had a few strange things come out of some of the equipment. I think Ash was actually there for one of them, about the murder that came out. Because I didn't actually hear that one, but you did on that. So you could probably tell that one.
Yeah, we'll sing up in what was dubbed the murder room. although Alison said that we don't know it was a murder, it was kind of, places can't just take on their own life and they get nicknames. So it was a room called the murder room upstairs, and we were in there. And this was apparently the room where the story Alison just shared with us took place. And so we just, with the ghost box, the guest just asked the typical questions. Did you, who are you? You know, the type of stuff that you'd ask. And we did. We asked what took place in this room. And three times, murder, murder, murder came out of the ghost box. Outside of technology and equipment, were people having a lot of personal experience? So
it is the one place, and it was coming up towards the end of the tours. The more we went in there, the more it seemed to make itself more known, the activity, more people were experiencing more stuff. But I actually physically, for the first time ever, watched a mobile phone fly off a chair and go 3 meters across the floor.
See, that's awesome. And that's a
that,
shit.
That, to me, it's the first time in, you know how often we go out there.
Yeah.
And it's like, first time I've ever seen something physical do something that's totally impossible. So
that's what I want to see, poltergeist shit happen.
Absolutely. And there's lots of that reported in your, well, not lots, but some of it is reported. And this is the first time you've seen it yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, you've been doing tours in a number of places for quite some time. Now, obviously, with Zed Ward, there's been a great level of interest from people that would traditionally not go on ghost tours just because it is Zed Ward. Mm. Did you find that people that were having experiences, the demographic of people having experiences in Zed Ward was very similar to the demographic of people that would have experiences in other locations like Old Tailham Town?
It was such a variety of people that were having these experiences. Most of them, as you said, came just for the history. It was their only opportunity to get into Zed Ward, and if that meant coming on a ghost tour, so be it. It's like they didn't care, they just wanted to see it. So it's interesting that even those people who didn't even believe in that stuff, weren't even there for it, were also experiencing.
So I think that's really fascinating, because it's a really good contrast. People that would go to Old Tailham Town are going for the ghost tour. People going to Zed Ward were going for the history, but they're all having those types of experiences.
Would you say there was a typical type of activity at Old Tailham Town? I guess you have a certain type of activity there that takes place in certain locations. You usually sees people quite upset. Was there a typical type of activity at Zed Ward that was happening again and again?
Yeah, there was a lot of different activity. The things that were getting reported over and over again was usually in lockdown, which is not where we actually locked people in. Not intentionally.
What a shame.
But we would put them into cells at the end of a night and shut the doors on them so they could feel what it was like to be a patient in there, if nothing else. And over again, we were getting reports of the sound of something breathing in the cell with them. They would hear footsteps just outside the cell, which was interesting because we would be monitoring the hallways with cameras and we weren't hearing it. They would also report the little bottom peephole, because on the cells there's two peepholes.
Yep.
The bottom one would black out as if somebody had just walked past. Occasionally they would hear the footsteps. So it's mainly that type of thing that was being reported over and over. So
would have been nice to have spent a lot more time in there. Would have been.
It would have been an interesting journey to, because it was definitely starting to seemingly get stronger, if that's the word for it. People were reporting more and more and more the more they came in.
And it's through the hotter months that that's been happening, and that was during, which is also fascinating.
So having it in winter would have been, and giving it a year, where would it have gone in a year's time? It was like Talem. It started off fairly quiet.
And picked up.
But the more we went in there, the more we got. And
how did people receive it overall? What was the feedback you were getting from people?
Oh, amazing, amazing feedback. In fact, those that were having it happen, they just couldn't wait to get back. Lots and lots of people would love to get back in.
Because even now, just a couple of days ago, you know, people are telling me that they went on a tour to Zed Ward. It's amazing the amount of people that really wanted to get in there and spend time and would love to go back. So,
and the people that missed out sucked in. And it was awesome. Yeah.
Did you have to deal with a lot of frustrated emails at the end there? So I remember you were saying you're getting hundreds of emails a day, you only have certain amounts. You may even have emails still waiting for you.
Was waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I would wake up to about 100 emails wanting to get into Zed Ward. And you kind of catch up and you go, thank God, I can go make a coffee now. And you're just about to leave your desk, and then emails would loop again, and a whole load, about 50 more emails would come in. It was constantly all day booking people in and dealing with emails.
You must have got some strange requests in some of those emails. Did you get any?
I didn't.
You didn't get a single request from people?
I didn't. No, they were all... Yeah, straightforward.
Do
very
you
sensible.
Ever get strange requests for things to do with your tours? Do you ever get? that's the type of stuff we like.
I think that's the other tour. That Horny Horizons.
Horny Horizons. the nickname for Adam.
Do you know? I can honestly say I've never actually had a strange request. I don't think
we've had
boringly
a couple of strange people on tours.
Well, you always get that, but
I think that this
the people who are probably working them are the problem.
I think this is a formal request for our listeners to start asking for some strange requests from Alison on her tours.
Well, if you want to spend a couple of hours naked in the old hotel, old Talem Town, for instance, maybe you can shoot Alison. Well, how would you deal with that? What would happen?
I guess with IRs, because it would be dark.
How would you deal with that? As a tour operator, you've probably seen a lot.
Depends who also is asking.
Comes down
to being choosy and picky, really.
But so you've not had anything happen. How would you deal with that? Let's say you at Old Talem Town, for instance, during the investigation stage, everyone splits up into smaller groups. And at this stage, you're usually kicking back and then you kind of float around. What would happen if you, let's say, rock up to Anna's group in the hotel, and for whatever reason, everyone's naked doing an EVP session? How would you deal with that?
With Anna's groups. Have you seen how she runs those?
Actually, that's quite normal for Anna.
What, getting naked in the hotel?
She gets into the... This reminds me of something.
Don't change the topic.
Here we go.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, here we go.
Somebody was asking me about all these... What sort of experiments that we used to... Remember all those experiments we used to sit down and talk about we should do? And I remember one that you wanted to come out with and do in particular.
What was this?
Because you had this theory.
Okay, well, I've got a lot of theories, and I've got a lot of excuses for things I want to do.
Come on, there's one in particular.
It
involved him getting his clothes off.
Okay, here we go.
I like where this is going so far.
It looks like he's got no idea what you're talking about.
Because this could still go in a number of directions.
What was this experiment he was proposing?
No, his theory was that if you got undressed and naked and had sex, then it would heighten paranormal activity. And this is what he wanted to try with paranormal field investigators.
Not the team specifically.
We never broke that news to Anna, though.
Yeah, I do remember that now. And I still stand by that. That would be, if it was on a night that would be conducive to potential activity. A new moon.
Oh, we're going to see a moon.
I would be very intrigued as to what, if any, difference that would make. And whether we'd catch paranormal activity too.
Maybe somebody,
or an STI.
Maybe somebody out there has already done this experiment can let us know.
You know, I'm sure it's people good idea. Have. I'd love to hear people's stories. Especially if
it involves the paranormal.
Any of our listeners had sex in a haunted location and seen an increase in paranormal activity once done?
That is a very good question.
Ectoplasm accepted.
Ectogasm.
Oh, no. That was going to go there.
You seem to have a fairly good relationship with these two. Look, you had the... How the hell do you meet these two? I can't think of a nice way to put it. How did these two come into your life? What was the deal with that?
Well, they kind of forced their way through the door, stuck the foot in the doorway so I couldn't shut it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Our charisma.
Your charisma got you in there.
Well, with Brett was the first one. Brett was before Spills. All right.
I like to hear origin stories. What was the origin of you two meeting?
Well, I had this phone call out of the blue and this gentleman ringing me up with all sorts of questions. And already I was like going, oh,
no. So that's because gentleman without someone adding your, you I know, didn't can you know leave, you then. You're making a scene.
Yeah, I didn't know you then, you were on the end of the phone. We were kind of, I was tolerating him and as I do with people, special people.
Still special, yeah.
And then he started talking out of the blue about coffee. And how he was a coffee addict. We got talking about coffee. And we got talking about
everyone knows you enjoy coffee.
Yeah.
Or two.
Well, he must have done his research.
Oh,
so.
Can I just say, Alison has the worst coffee habit I have ever seen.
Yeah.
Right? Now, picture this.
It's okay. A magic tonic.
Okay,
it's
so
good.
Picture this. We spend a lot of sleepless nights out investigating, right? So Alison has come up with her special fuck knows what you want to call it. But anyway, it's a can of Coke Zero. It has to be Coke Zero or Pepsi Max. Oh, don't worry. I remembered the Pepsi Max.
Bit of advertising there.
Now, is it one or two teaspoons?
It's as much as I can get in there.
Okay, as much as you can get in. So picture Alison sitting there with a can of Pepsi Max or a bottle of Pepsi Max, a teaspoon, a jar of coffee, and shoveling coffee into the opening of the bottle or the...
It's got to be Makona. Come on.
And
sometimes we dispense completely with the spoon. We
anyway,
just pour the coffee.
So what is interesting, though, is the reaction this creates. So once the coffee goes into the Pepsi Max or Coke Zero, and you give it a little stir, it just shoots out the top. Now, Alison has a habit of, before it's shooting out the top, putting her mouth around it and allowing it to shoot into her mouth. This is no shit.
No shit.
And I've seen it 100 times.
Do you know what we call that now? Coke khaki.
But anyway, but there have been times when Alison has missed. And it's ended up everywhere. I can remember.
That was in the car.
We were on an invest. Oh, we're coming.
We're from
the face in the car.
That's right. That was actually an interesting investigation. That place.
But before I get back to the,
we didn't even finish the.
Yeah,
coffee.
Sorry. Back to finishing that story. I just want to pick up one other bad habit, Alison. Well, you don't have this habit anymore, but there is one other bad habit I want to bring up, which is a lot of people would say that editing photos before putting them up online would be a bad thing, especially if you're trying to keep together a legitimate ghost tour experience. The thing is, you are not editing to add in things. You are editing your photos to take things out. What were you removing from your photos and why?
Okay, well, I quite...
I love it. I think it's great. I used to
all the time, and we could take about 100 photos a night.
Up at Old Tail and Town.
At Old Tail and Town would be typical. Painstakingly take out every single orb.
Orb as it would, hang on, dust particles.
Yes.
So I would painstakingly with Photoshop, actually Photoshop my photos for the opposite reasons.
Yes.
Now, didn't it get to a point, Alison, where you employed your daughter?
Yeah,
because there were so many
point.
Dust particles in these photos that you employed your daughter and she was removing them for
you. Well,
I
was doing it the long way. Because I didn't really know much about Photoshop, okay. So I was doing one little individual one by one and doing it whereas there's other ways, and my daughter knows those. So
rather than showing you, you just said you do
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
why
get her
were
to
you
help.
Taking the orbs out? Everyone else seems to leave them because, well, it gives something people to
I
talk
leave them
about.
Now because it's too much hard work.
It's a dusty
and
location.
I don't have the hours in the day to do that. Mainly to stop arguments on the page, because Haunted Horizons is supposed to be a relaxed page where we can all get on and everybody has their own views. Nobody's going to knock them for it. But what I was finding was you would be getting arguments between the orb people and the non-orb people, and it was just getting unpleasant. So, yeah, I just ended up taking out every
Fair
orb.
Enough.
So...
I just think it's funny.
Nowadays, it's funny because nobody ever comments on the
Can I just add, I was never allowed to comment on the against orb phone.
I just got there smashing people. All right, let's take it back to where we were about 5 minutes ago. So Brett's called up and started talking about coffee.
Yes. And then he offered me the ultimate coffee.
He offered you an ultimate,
ultimate.
Even better than the Coke khaki.
Not that good. He actually offered to get me a weasel poo coffee.
Brett, you okay. Go.
That got my attention.
Okay. Well, all right. First thing I need to clarify is, if you want to be technical, it's not really a weasel. It's a civet.
Civet.
A civet, but we'll call it a weasel because it's easier to say. But the weasels go and they find the coffee beans, they eat them and begin to digest the outside of them. And that chemical change creates, obviously, some change in the bean itself, which after digestion is collected by farmers.
So you're talking about the
actual coffee bean.
Weasel shits it weasel out.
Civet.
Yep.
Shits it out, although I have read some people say that it vomits them out, but I believe it is. Shits them out.
Right.
Farmers collect them, clean them, so they're technically a bit cleaner than a normal coffee bean.
Right.
And then roast them. And you know, this is exclusive stuff, but it's about $50 for a cup of this coffee.
Okay. So I could
Can humans do it?
Human poop coffee.
I think that we've got a...
There's an experiment. He's always talking about experiments. Brett's always talking about experiments.
That's not really my sort of thing.
So originally, did you ring up Alison out of the blue just to offer her this strange coffee?
Hi, I'm Brett.
Would you like to eat some shit coffee?
Drink.
You know what? That was just part of it. It's because I had interest in the paranormal for some time, seen there's stuff on TV. What's going on out there in reality, I had an interest in finding out. And I thought, well, how am I going to do that without actually getting out there and getting into people's homes legally and seeing, how extreme is paranormal activity? Is it real? What is the case? And that's where I came across Alison and gave her a call and... talked about coffee instead, and I've realised that coffee, that's what's going to get me in here. So and I'll say I still haven't followed through and given
I'm still waiting for that weasel poo coffee. Okay. And how many years has it been?
Ooh,
yeah, you owe me.
I do
actually. I'm keen to try it now.
It is meant to be really good.
Isn't it $50 a cup or something?
Yeah, Brett, shut up.
We can get a whole bag of of the beans all ready to go and grind them up and...
Fuck. Does it come with a little fucking, a toilet paper to wipe your mouth with after or what? Well, okay. Skills and arson, how the hell did you guys meet?
Well...
Interesting story.
Well,
so.
No, you should think.
Wasn't that the hot, horny and wanting to hook up.com website?
How did you and Brett meet, Ash?
Grinder.
Touche.
Touche.
Well, I do believe it was a Sunday morning.
Was it a phone call as well?
Yeah.
It was.
Did you just sit there taking random calls?
On a Sunday, of all the time, Sunday morning, was it 7:30?
About 8 o'clock. But a bit of back history, and I think it was the last podcast. No, it might have been the first or second podcast I brought up about capturing an EVP at St. John's Cemetery in Kapunda. And the next morning, I gave Alison a call because I captured something. I was like, what the fuck is this?
And he was all excited.
Well, it's a bit apparent. I didn't, at that stage, that was the first time.
This was the woman saying there was a school here.
Yeah. And being that, you know, it was something new to me, I thought, fuck, is something following me home? So I rang Alison. So Alison got a phone call 8 o'clock in the morning saying, do you think it followed me home? Pretty much. So yeah.
Immediately my little radar went off.
But well, send it through.
Yeah, send it through. I'll have a listen. And it went from there. And we think we went out to Kapunda Cemetery.
It was.
We? Yeah.
I think it was.
And I think after that I just said, do you want to join the team?
Yeah, you felt sorry for me.
I felt so sorry for him because he had nobody.
I know, right?
And look at him.
And then I never got rid of him. Yeah.
I just find it strange that there's just two random early 30, or well, late 20 something males just ring you up and you just take them under your wing.
What can I say?
Okay. Well, actually, that's an interesting question. Spills asks, can it follow me home? Do you get that question a lot with the tours?
All the time.
Do you get, so people will come and they might be brave to get there and into the car park. Usually they're cracking it when you're telling them the rules. Yeah. And by the end of the tour, are they thinking, holy crap, is something going to come home with me?
That's usually at the beginning of the tour.
And how do you deal with that? Because that's got to be a fear that would not be easy to allay in someone.
Yeah, it is.
It is. No, look, we say basically nothing. We've never had it. And the whole time I've been investigating, I've never... Well, I'd
say
never.
I was about to say, I'm about to call you a lie.
Okay, never usually taken anything home. There's been once in 26 years. And that's, I think, because I used to say on the tours, I've done this tour so many times, never had it come home with me, and lay their fears. And then one night in particular at my house, we were having really weird things happen all night. I saw a figure go past my window, which I live on the top of a hill in the middle of nowhere, so people can't get up there. My door opened on its own, the handle went down. And then I got up, and you know how you meet in the kitchen. My guide, who used to stay at my house, got up and said, I had a really weird night last night. He said his window was bowing out as though somebody just hit it over his head, but it was bowing outwards. My daughter got up, made a coffee, and said, I had a really weird night last night. And she had strange sounds banging around her bedroom all night. So it was just a weird night altogether. Only one night ever. And it was almost like it said, no, but I can if I want to. Yeah. But generally, no. We've never had anything come home.
I've stayed at your house before. Typically back in the days where it was lots of back-to-back tours. So it was just easy to go back to yours and then, bam, go head to the next location next day. And you had told me a story. Jesus Christ.
That is Alison's phone.
That's, imagine doing a ghost tour and someone decides to call her. Bam.
Should we call out that number to the listeners? Teach them a lesson.
There you go. I'll turn it off.
But you told me this story about how you were hearing a ghost child or something in your house. Now, I don't know if you made that up just to freak me out or if there was something that was happening, but my first night staying there, right, you've told me, you've put me to sleep down at the spare end of the house, and that's where you said this activity's taken place. I'm shit scared, as people know, so I'm laying there. I'm slowly drifting off to sleep. Then in the middle of the night, I open my eyes, and I see something standing at the end of my bed, and I've shat myself. I'm sorry, I can't even scream.
Literally?
I'm paralysed with fear, like, you know, can't do anything. That's when I realised it was just her German Shepherd. I can't just perch there watching me. But that was freaking itself. So, yeah, no, I would not have liked to have been in your house when stuff was really taking place. I remember a funnier one. Really?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Do you remember the Beechworth?
What Beechworth one?
When we went to stay at Adam's
God. Yeah, you're going to tell it anyway. Go for it. This will prove just how chicken shit I am.
All right, so we go to Beechworth. asylum, but we're staying at the person who runs it at his house, which happens to be a haunted house. So he tells
old post office.
Yeah, it's an old post office. So he happens to tell us at a certain time of night, they quite often have seen a figure walking down the hallway. But it happens to be where Ash is sleeping, all right? Yeah. So I have the spare bedroom, Ash has this sofa in this area, and I'm just bedding down for the night. When suddenly the door opens, Ash just, without saying a word, walks in, throws a whole load of cushions on the floor at the bottom of my bed. and the quilt, and gets into it. Doesn't say a word. What the fuck are you doing?
Did you really?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
we,
fucking
hang on. He did.
Were you in your boxer shorts?
He was by the end of the night. How did you do that? He got into bed fully dressed, all right, and he wakes up in the morning and his clothes are all over the bedroom. Nobody knows when he got undressed.
Many people have experienced me getting undressed in July. It's like a magic ability of mine. But no, but see, I remember the story exactly the same as you do, but there was another element to the story that made where I was staying infinitely more creepy. This guy had all over his house all these vintage fucking... like photographs, like I don't know if they were post-mortem, if they were just Victorian era photographs or whatever, and they're just in like really ancient gilded frames and they're just staring at you.
Fuck,
you know
that.
All these people are dead.
Fuck,
and there's
that.
Dozens of them. I'm talking like every inch of space is just like another frame with another creepy dead-eyed face staring at you. Take that along with the fact that this dead post office keeper will be walking through the house anytime. There was no way I could sleep. I can't sleep. I don't care investigating a haunted location. I hate sleeping in them. Like at St. Cecilia's. Where do us poor staff, would we have to sleep? Downstairs in the cellar.
<That's>
absolutely creepy.
Best place to sleep.
The only way I could sleep is if I turned a video camera on me and filmed all night, because by Murphy's Law, nothing's going to happen when you're filming. So that's my hot tip. If you have to sleep in a haunted location, you're paranoid, just get that video camera filmed on you. Nothing's going
to
happen.
Next time we'll do that and he'll forget to hit record.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, God.
Or when he falls asleep, we'll just stop recording.
Yeah, it'll just go flat. Yeah.
Or the battery will run out.
So you got your asylum in the end? You're happy with that? Is there other locations or styles of locations you wish you could be running tours through? Maybe there's a listener listening out there goes, I have one of those abandoned nuclear power plants you'd like to run ghost tours
through.
Well,
that's a good one.
Yeah. Is there anything else like that you haven't run a ghost tour through yet, but you would love to?
I would still say jails and asylums would be the tops.
Well,
the
hospital.
Public. Yeah, an old hospital.
That'd be great. That's my...
I love
old hospitals.
Old hospitals would be good. If you know one, call in.
If you just happen to have an old hospital
in
your backyard.
If you just happen to live in an old hospital and you just happen to want somebody there, then, yeah, we'll be your man. So, yeah, I suppose a hospital, but I think my love is the real darker history, the jails, the asylums. And I think that's where the public also are drawn.
Locations with that, even if they don't have a ghost story, have a reason to go there just for the history.
Just for the history alone,
stories.
Yeah.
Are there any locations that you wouldn't run tours through?
Yeah, look, ethically, cemeteries, definitely not. And if I, not even a history tour for me as a business, because just the words haunted horizons, it's going to give that connotation that it is a haunted cemetery. Whether I was doing a haunting thing or just history, it wouldn't matter. So you obviously then start attracting a lot of attention to those cemeteries. Then people come up and you also get them vandalised. A lot of the cemeteries that have that tag are pretty much damaged now. So definitely wouldn't do cemeteries. Even on our street tours, we won't stand outside people's houses and go, well, this house had a big murder in it and it's haunted. And that's because people will harass the owners, they'll do burnouts, so I'll kind of stand on the street corner, but we won't stand outside of that person's house. So we do have that line of ethics. That's why we don't talk about modern murders either.
Yep.
Because it'd be like glorifying it. So, yeah.
Okay.
A few places.
Right, before we get on to the listener's question, just got one last thing I want to talk about specific to you, and that is you recently had a fairly close call in losing your home. When were the fires? About 6 months ago?
Started 2nd of January.
So yeah, so yes. Oh, wow, so
burned into the head at 11:30.
So if you, those that aren't familiar with Australia, we're very, especially in the drier states, such as South Australia, very prone to bushfires, and we've had some very tragic ones. And about 5-6 months ago, we did have a real bad one tear through. What was it, Sampson Flat? This is what it was called. And your house was pretty much right in the, well, firing line, so to speak. What was that like? Because this was right at the time you were in the middle of doing nightly ghost tours through Zedwood. So nightly, you were having to leave your home without knowing whether it was going to be there when you got back.
Well, the hardest part was the first day it started on the Friday. And once we realised it was going to be really, really bad. So, but I also had a Zedwood tour booked that night. And you can't just, I guess workaholic, it's an awful thing to say, you can't just let the whole tour just ignore it. And so I had to leave the property, which meant I could also take all our valuables in the bus and leave. It was the hardest thing I had to do, because when I was driving away and I looked back, the smoke and the flames were just huge. So you knew it was not going to be a nice or a good thing. The whole time I was down doing Z Ward, I was hearing on the ABC, and the fire is about to hit, and they were naming my road. But there's nothing you can do about it, apart from just try and forget it. So here I am going, oh, welcome to Zed Ward. I'm going to be your guide for the night. All the time the ABC is going, and the fire is just about to hit this road. Where my husband has stayed behind with the to get the animals out. Managed to get back that night. It didn't. The wind changed and blew it away. But managed to sneak through the barricades that night. But had to leave to do a tour again the next day, and that was it. I was displaced for 3 days before I could get back home, knowing that my husband was still there, my animals were still there.
Yep.
So, yeah, it was a very stressful time. You just didn't know. You were waiting for the fire, because the winds, it was going everywhere. It was just nobody knew what direction it was going to go in, and it was everywhere. So,
how far did the fire stop from your house, Alison? Now, I know this answer, but this blows me away. And how was it stopped?
All right. It got to within 20 metres of my house, and even the CFS guy said if it hadn't been for a well-placed water bomber that came in and dropped its load at that moment. The CFS, the pilots, everybody who worked that night, or those few days, complete heroes.
And that's awesome.
And, well, this is where we're going to plug a project. And it's not really a plug, because this isn't a project for you, but you are... Are you working on, or have you completed, but you're working on a book of photography?
Yep. It was a case of... The whole community was so grateful to the CFS. At the end of the day, we had a major...
That's Country Fire Service for everyone.
Sorry, Country Fire Service, These are volunteers, for those who don't know. And it was a case of, really, when you think about it was a major, major fire. We didn't lose one life in that fire. Whereas most major fires, you'll lose life. And they were so determined. I saw with my own property just how determined they were, that they were going to just protect home people. And so it's a case of, well, how do we thank them as a community? If you give money to them, then usually that'll go to the government. So it was a case of, well, what else can we do? And I came up with the concept, or somebody, one of my people on Facebook, Narelle, came up with the concept of, why don't you write a book? So instead of writing a book, we decided to go for imagery, because there were so many excellent photographs out there. Put it together as a memory of that time with a few, stories of what people were thinking, and then donate the whole lot to the CFS Foundation. So we managed to get my publisher on board. I rang him up and said, hey, can you donate a bit to this? And he goes, you better come in. And then he asked what I wanted to do. He sat and listened to me, and then he said, mainly because he had a daughter in Gumaraka, which was also to be affected, and he was in the Ash Wednesday fires, the big ones years ago. We've got a graphic designer for free on board who's offered to give her time, and the ink companies and the paper companies. So everything is paid for, if you like. We don't have to put a penny.
Fantastic.
Make anything, but hopefully we're going to run off 500 copies, and it'll be a collector's item, something a bit special. And every single cent will go to the CFS Foundation.
Fantastic.
Not even costs will be kept.
I mean, I think that's a fantastic thing. And one other thing I remember about the fire is the community involvement, you know, people being involved, just the average public getting involved in some way, trying to help people. I mean, do you have any thoughts or comments on
that? Oh, look, it was, the whole response was amazing. And that's the whole thing about Australia. When there's a disaster or when there's a tragedy, you know, despite how people usually bicker and fight and everything else, when it comes to standing together for that, you see so much heart coming from the public, from the communities around who just want to help and help.
I can remember you, Alison, telling me once your husband and the CFS saved your house, your husband was in the car down the road to the neighbour's house, then trying to save the neighbour's house as well.
Yeah, all the neighbours were kind of keeping an eye on each other's houses. Yeah. And none of the neighbours actually left. There was always one person from the house, one of the guys would stay. So
fantastic.
Myself and Spills went for a drive probably a couple of weeks after, and it was like, I've never seen anything like it.
It was unbelievable.
You could literally, for miles, besides the road you're on, for miles around, every direction was literally just the trunks, and everything was just ash.
Yeah, it was just sticks, yeah.
What type of images is this book going to show? So you said there was going to be, obviously, a lot of the devastation, because that's a large part of it, but
we don't want it to be. What we wanted to steer away from was photograph after photograph after photograph of burnt-out forest.
Yeah.
And what we wanted was unique photographs that told a story in a small way. A melted wheelie bin in a strange shape is a story in itself. A burnt sign is a story. We got some, hopefully getting some pictures of the Tour Down Under, because they went through all the burnt areas. So, and that tells a story. It's different.
It's going to be a lot of colour.
Oh, well, that's sightless.
All the, So, it was a case of we wanted something a bit different. Somebody sent me an absolutely stunning photograph of four of their horses all lined up. But then in the background, you've got the burnt, complete burnt up. But it's a stunning photograph just because, you know, it's different. It's got the horses in there. They survive. So, it's not just going to be picture after picture of just burnt trees.
And how's the land doing now? Sorry, and your house is all starting to come back?
It's the trees are starting to come back, as in they've got the shoots coming through. In fact, they look furry at the moment, because it's just the whole of the trunks are just green, looks like green fur. The ground cover is taking longer, so which is a shame, because the animals out there don't really have a lot to eat. I'm busy feeding our wild kangaroos at the moment. Especially the one that turned up and she'd had her leg burnt off.
Oh, wow.
So we're looking after her, but she's doing all right. She's getting around. She's crippled. Mm. But she's not infected, so we're kind of, as long as we feed and water her. She's got a joey at her foot. So, yeah, the animals suffered a lot, and it's good to see people are out there feeding. I'm feeding mine.
It's absolutely brilliant that you're getting that book together, and even not just for the fundraiser, just be able to tell the story and have that story there in hardcover, that's absolutely fantastic. Alright guys, well look, we are getting towards the end, but we did last week, after the last podcast, we did get sent in a listener's question, and we will cover that now. I really enjoy listening to your podcast and your thoughts and what you believe in. I thought a good discussion would be about reincarnation and how you believe this can occur. Reincarnation, guys, we haven't really touched that as a subject on the podcast yet.
No, we haven't.
Okay, then. Have at it. Actually, we'll pop it to Alison first, and then we'll go around the table. Alison, as our guest, reincarnation, do you have any belief?
Not a belief, but I have had some strange experiences.
You have?
I have. Yes.
Absolutely. Look, if you've got
experiences. What is it? I don't know, because there's lots of theories on it, so I can only go by what I remember. Firstly, when I was younger, I knew how to ride a horse, knew exactly the feel of a horse before I'd even been near horses, because I lived in the city. And in fact, as I've got older, my ability to ride got worse, not better. Going back 20 years ago, I had a virus, and it resulted in stomach ache, and I was kind of doubled up, and it was like a sudden flash, and suddenly, very clearly, I was on my back.
Why are you laughing, Alison?
Wow. Continue.
It spills a spice at that.
Sorry.
So I was on my back, and I had this man's... over me.
Keep going.
Yeah. So, and it's going to sound tacky, but I felt like I was Native American. And the man that was standing over me was a cavalry soldier. Now, in the movies, you see them all as very clean. I used to in the movies that I used to watch in the old days, going back to the 1800s. And they used to have, and they used to have those nice clean uniforms and their nice neat hats. But this one didn't. He was very, very disheveled. Could still see his face, still see the hair. It was very greasy, very lank. And I felt like I had just been pierced either by, well, some object had just gone through my stomach, and either a lance or something like that. And I just still remember seeing his face as he stood over me. And it was the weirdest feeling. Oh, it was only brief, and then bang, I was back where I was.
Awesome.
And I don't know. There's lots of theories on it. There's the, one of them is that you carry it in your genetics, your cells, cell memory or genetic memory, but I haven't got any relations that would have been in America in that time, in my line. Although one did go over there, and a very famous one of mine, he wasn't directly related from that line.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'd call it so much reincarnation as more of a fantasy. So you, just snap into it as you laying on your back, copping something long and hard.
And a really dirty man.
So, but in all seriousness, so you don't say that's reincarnation. That's just
Fifty Shades of Alison.
now it's really starting to come out. Yeah, look, it's various little things like that. Driving down Main North Road, I'd just got some American Indian music from a TV show, and most of it's modern stuff. Piano playing with just it's modern composed stuff.
Yep.
And just remember that on one track, for some reason, it got to one of the tracks and I just burst out crying. And I actually had to pull the car over because the whole feeling was, I want to go home. I want to go home that badly. But it wasn't England where I came from. It was actually America. I've never lived in America. And it was to the point where I had to pull over. When I looked up that track, the track that it was actually the only track on that tape that was a original lullaby, one of the Native Americans, the Lakota Sioux lullaby. And it was just the weirdest feel. It was just like, I need to go home. Weird, weird, weird.
That is strange.
I spent all my childhood making bows and arrows and spears, and it was...
You seem to have passed that on to your son.
Yeah, no, he just likes big sharp objects.
No joke. And I don't want to get too personal here, but the first time I met her son, her son comes up to me, and he's probably only 13, 14 at the time. He comes up and he goes, here, hold this box. I was like, okay, he hands me this wooden box. The fucking box electrocuted me. It turned out the contacts under it to like some weird bloody battery. That's my first impression of her children. Awesome.
That's my son. Do you remember that time we came home from the tour and there was blood everywhere?
Oh, what
and
the hell?
And bandages.
Yeah, because he'd been running around with swords or something.
He fell down a hill and stabbed himself. When we came in, there's a first aid kit out. There's blood everywhere and there's bandages all over the place.
Let's hope he doesn't need to be reincarnated anytime soon.
So I don't know. I don't know what it is. I really don't know. I'm not going to say we have past lives or I don't know until it's here, looked into more. So.
Spills.
Personally, I've got a pretty fucked up theory on this.
I like it. Let's hear
pretty
it.
Out there theory. But again, you know, I've never had any personal experiences as such, Alison. But I have a theory, and it sort of touches on what Brett was saying. I think it was last podcast about energy and dispersion of energy and consciousness and that sort of thing. Now, you know, what if electrons, protons, neurons, atoms could actually hold memories? Right? So us being people, we die, our consciousness dissipates as energy into these particles, and parts of that consciousness are trapped in those particles that dissipate. Now we know that particles form matter and matter forms us, etc., etc. So what if then we don't have a past life, as in, you know, we die, we're reborn as someone else, but we have parts of 100 people that have passed away. Okay. You know? So, and that's why there's that, a lot of people report having many past lives, but it could be just these snippets of memory that have been captured on or within these particles that have formed
us. That's actually interesting.
So, or I could be completely fucking wrong, right?
Yep.
And we could just come back as a woman hitting concrete truck driver or something. I don't know.
what you said, that's an interesting idea, what you said about I could die. Going by what Sprett's talking about previous podcast, my personality could be fragmented.
Yep.
And then individual parts of that fragment could be used to build up another soul, so to speak. Does that mean, if that is, and that's just a theory.
Exactly right.
You know, does that mean there could be people out there that are having recollections of the same past life? Like, so I could be having a past life, and yes, someone in Ireland could be having and recollections of that same past life.
Good example of this, and I've read some, I've done some research on it. A lot of people have, a good example, Cleopatra, you know, a lot of people have past life regression and they recall living a life as Cleopatra. Could it be that the particles that formed Cleopatra's consciousness have dissipated into the universe and form other people's consciousness?
So, you know. I'm going to agree 100% with you on that.
Wow.
So, I mean, obviously, great minds think alike.
Yep.
Sort of messed up ones, but we won't go there. The description, the way I describe that, really looks at even what's called a Gaia concept. That if we even imagine there's an ocean of energy, and that when someone's born, you take a cup of that water out, and that's that person. And then when they die, you pour that back into that ocean of energy. That will eventually dissipate. You know, if you pour a cup of coke into it, it's going to dissipate quite quickly. But if you take another cup of energy out, pretty soon after when there's still a lot of that energy remaining, you're going to get some of those coke particles, as you've said, out of that ocean. So I like to use that ocean of energy, taking a cup, pouring it back in, taking in another cup, pouring it back in. You're going to get fragments of the same thing over
exactly
time.
Right.
And then I think that when people, I've spoken before about when people die, there seems to be that the strongest part of their personalities seem to be what hang around the most. So, you know, if there's something traumatic, that's the aspect of the haunting that seems to remain. And so perhaps we can look at it as the aspects of their personality that are the strongest are also the densest when being poured back into that ocean. And so those parts hang around that a little bit more as well. So yeah, I agree with you 100% on that.
It's not that fucked up then.
No. And you said you weren't on drugs last week.
No, I'm not. Yeah, and I'd like to say I'm not on drugs tonight.
Myself, reincarnation, I haven't thought too much about it. I've written a little bit about it. My thought is just that it would be a pity if this was the only time we got to go around on this planet and have these experiences. That, you know, I'd like to believe there's some kind of continuation after we die, not because of a fear of death, a finality of death, just from the fact that it would just be a pity if we only get to ride this once. And that's pretty much all I think about reincarnation.
Yeah, but you know what? That depends entirely from the context of what you're taking this ride on. You know what about people in Africa right now?
Well,
that,
true.
You know, you could say it'd be a pity for them to have to suffer that more than once.
That is
twice,
true.
Three times.
But then all the spiritualists.
So you cruel bastard.
That is true. But all the spiritualists will be there saying, but oh no, those people needed those experiences. There was something valuable to learn from being a starving child and being stalked by buzzards in fucking Africa.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Just adding to this, and the more I'm thinking about it now, you know, if you go back into the reincarnation side of it, and if you believe in soulmates and those sorts of things, you know, so many people around the world have those experiences. But is it just those connections, if you want to call them, those soulmate connections, are they because you're just recognizing part of yourself that was you in your previous life?
Holy shit.
Does that make sense?
That does make sense.
Like, so, you know, like, and that's that connection.
Soulmates are in love with themselves.
Yeah, but it's almost like, no, but it's that recognition of something you knew. And being that it was a part of yourself, you recognise that. Or again, you could just be a woman beating concrete truck driver.
Is that some weird form of spiritual incest?
Possibly. Yeah, okay. That's
fine. I don't know how this shit works. We gotta get some really spiritual one. Well, the question that question that was asked reminded me of a question that was asked from a page, I couldn't even tell you, 2013 sometime, and which is, if you are reincarnated, could your next life be in the past, or does reincarnation follow a normal timeline?
Well, isn't it proven that there is no time and space? So if there's no time, therefore...
Oh, no, there is time. It's just not something that is linear in the way that we tend to think about. So space and time are intrinsically connected. So carry on.
Well, I mean, there's a possibility, though, isn't there? I mean...
Oh, God, it's a paranormal. Anything's possible.
Well, okay, a good example, Brett. You know, you look at the stars. Mm-hmm. The light we're seeing is from how many thousands of years ago... So, is there that possibility? I think there is.
Well, you know, why wouldn't there be? You can look at if you look at a picture of a galaxy, you're looking at a spread of over, you know, it could be over 150,000 years. From the one edge of the galaxy closest to you in the photo will be 150,000 years younger than the edge in the other part of the photo. So, we know that, you know, time is certainly something we don't really understand. It's just something we experience in a linear fashion through our consciousness.
But going by that question, if we were to die today and then be reincarnated, there is potential for us to be reincarnated in the past.
Could you be reincarnated as yourself?
Don't know, could you?
Did I kill a conversation?
I don't know where to go with that one.
Interesting.
It is a fascinating thing, but then what you need to do is look at it. Are there any... philosophical aspects you'd want to consider in that question. You know, if you consider, is reincarnation from something that you just need to evolve spiritually, and maybe you need to go through that linear process of time in order to do that? Or is that nothing to do with it whatsoever? So,
back to Alfie.
Can you please definitively answer this for this? Answer it for us once and for all.
Remember the reason why Brett called you in the first place. You were the expert he was seeking on his... for his whatever is going on. Now we would like the definitive answer on reincarnation from Al Snowborn
and whether reincarnation and whether you can be reincarnated in the past.
I've never heard personally of anybody being reincarnated from the future. But that could come back to your dipping the cup in the well, because if the person in the future hasn't died yet and gone back into the universe, as you say, then they can't dip it out, can they?
That's actually a bloody good point.
Yes. Yeah. So there's nothing really to dip out for the future. Yeah, what do you see?
It's almost like a time travel. You just got fucked up.
You know what? It uses the points that we gave, though. So technically, she was standing on the shoulders of giants to answer.
Oh. And we'll finish it up there. So, guys and girls listening at home, what were some of the things we wanted them to do? We wanted to know if you've ever investigated or copulated naked in a haunted location, had experiences. I'd also like to know if anyone here has drunk any of that, well, not here, but anyone listening has drunk some of that civet poo coffee. Would also like to know if you can find any research that supports multiple peoples having the same past life experiences. That would be really interesting. I think that's something I might look into myself.
And future.
Good place
future
to look is a gentleman by the name of Dr. Brian Weiss.
Dr. Brian Weiss?
Mm-hmm.
Onto that. Is he the one that wrote the book about all those kids that getting...
He wrote a couple of books, Many Lives, Many Masters.
Yep.
And another one, Only Love Is Real. So, yeah. Check him out.
Alison, is there anything you would like to know? Or would like to hear? Any feedback from the listeners? Anything in particular?
Hospitals.
Hospital, if you happen to have a hospital.
You've got a hospital in my brain now.
Get in contact. Probably best to go straight to Adelaide's Haunted Horizons. Where can they find you? That, I think that's going to be helpful.
It would be helpful. They can find us on the website, which is www.adelaidehauntedhorizons.com.au, and the same with Facebook, Haunted Horizons Ghost Tours, I think we're called.
if you just search for Adelaide Haunted Horizons.
Just look for Adelaide Haunted Horizons and it'll come up. So
there you go.
Before we'll have links up on our... If it makes it easy, we'll put links up on our pages.
Yeah, there'll be links up on the podcast description as well. Anything else, guys, before we hang up?
Over and out.
All good.
All good.
you gotta have something else.
Go on, say something.
You gotta.
How do you not? What do you normally say at the end of your tours? Do you have a sign for your tours?
Get out.
Do you normally say at the end of your tours?
Yeah.
I usually. Yeah, I can't remember. What do I say at the end of my tours?
You just kind of walk off and hand it off to the your underlings.
I hope you've enjoyed the tour, and I hope you've enjoyed this show.
Oh, that was awesome.
There you go. That's great. That was like in professional radio voice and everything.
I'm just going to say bye.
See you later. Until next time.
Easy done.